Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. On the Arts Beat, the Pendleton Artist Society is presenting its Day of the Dead art show on October 24th and 25th. Some of the pieces will be from inmates at the Pendleton Correctional Facility, where, as you heard on this show, volunteers from the society have been working as volunteer teachers. The gallery is located at 119 State Street in downtown Pendleton. Muncie Civic Theater presents Carrie, the rock musical, on the Main Stage Theater starting October 17th through November 1st. The musical is based on the book by Stephen King and is rated PG-13. Buy tickets online at MuncieCivic.org or call the box office at 765-288-PLAY. Considering how many of our cities are built along rivers, it's surprising sometimes how little time we actually spend looking at them. For most of us, rivers are just something to drive over. You might read about all the bridges that need repair, look down at that water, and shiver a little. But most of us don't spend much time near the water, or at least not enough to appreciate the beauty and mystery and history of it all. But two Ball State professors, Adam Cuban from the Department of Journalism and geology professor Lee Floria, have been down on the river a lot lately, and we caught up with them recently in Muncie.
So here we are at the White River. What do you see as we're standing here? I don't know it the way that you do, but it looks pretty clear. Is it as clean as it looks?
Well, I would say that it definitely looks much better. We had a significant flood event a couple weeks ago that more or less washed everything away. So at the moment, it's out of sight, out of mind. It looks clear, it looks clean, but you never know exactly what's floating in the water, and that's why we're doing what we're doing.
Tell me about that.
I am an assistant professor in journalism, and I have a co-instructor and colleague in the geological sciences department, and he and I team teach a water quality course at Ball State with students from journalism, telecommunications, geology, natural resource, and environmental management. And we've also had students from biology and chemistry join us for this interdisciplinary effort to study our local waterways and try to promote some media deliverables that contribute to a greater public understanding of science.
You want people to understand better what the river is and what kind of shape it's in.
Yes, sir. We are very interested in the White River. That's where the course began in its debut last fall. And this semester, fall 2014, our students will examine the Mississinewa watershed. That river, as you know, flows northeast of Muncie.
We're standing out here now, and we're by the Tillotson Bridge over the White River. And what do you see here? I mean, put another way, this river used to be really dirty, filled with industrial wastes. Do we have any sense of how we're doing at this point?
This is Lee Floria, and I teach in the Department of Geological Sciences, and I'm working with Adam on this class. And one of the questions that students bring to us is one that you had asked about. You know, so you look at the water and the water looks really clear. And so what's wrong with the water? Sometimes pollutants are not seen. And so one thing that we have been focusing on with this class, and last year we worked in the White River watershed where Buck Creek comes in from the south side of Muncie to Yorktown. And a big part of that work was looking at some of the unseen pollutants, things that come from upstream. So we're concerned with agricultural products, excess nitrogen, excess phosphorus, sedimentation, those that come out of our soybean and corn production in agricultural regions outside of the city. We know as scientists that best management practices help to reduce that, but understanding how to manage the streams and the stream banks is very important to understanding the nature of the water quality. And so when I look at the water and I see this, the White River, it looks clear. However, I also know that nitrogen levels and phosphate levels can be elevated, and those can lead to excess algae and excess production of other biological things, which then can lead to oxygen reduction and die-offs of other creatures that are living in the river. And those are important to us here, but also to people that live downstream from here.
How is your class looking at this?
Well, we're doing several different things. And so we're trying to take an approach that combines both the scientific aspect of the study, but also the journalism aspect of the study, because both are important to selling that story to the general public. And so what we're doing from a scientific sense, and last year was a great example of this, is we had our students, both from the science and the media side, every week go out and collect water samples at key locations. They would bring those samples back, they would analyze them in the lab, they would create graphs of what the trends in the data looked like, and try to come up with some interpretations about what that meant. Now, that's the science side, but when you have the data, that doesn't tell the story. What we needed to impart upon those students is the need to create good media deliverables that sell that data to the general public. Graphs are not just or just one part of that. We also had videos, still imagery. We created posters. We sent students to conferences. We had all of these different parts of this to teach the students the importance of effective communication with the public.
What should people know about these streams that they don't know? And I think back to the combined sewer overflow issue in Marion County in Indianapolis, where the health department would put up signs telling people to stay out of the water. You know, you'd have a stream that looked like something from a Rockwell portrait where kids might want to be playing in it. And somebody once said, you know, it's not only not safe to eat the fish from this stream, but you shouldn't even touch them. Are we in that kind of shape with White River?
I would hesitate to comment directly on that. Both Adam and I are relatively new to the area, and we know that those problems have existed. They exist in the White River, and they exist in the Mississinewa and several others in Indiana. Things have changed and improved. However, there still are, as you note, times and locations where it is recommended not to eat the fish. What we're trying to establish with our students is that a holistic approach to understanding the water and the river is very important to managing that river, starting with the water, looking at the sediments, looking at the stream banks, the forest on the side, and the fields that contribute the runoff to that. All of it is part of the river health, and as the public, it's good for us to know parts of that and pull that together into a better management. And our students, hopefully as part of this class, can learn how to make some of that communication more widely available.
Well, in some places they do regular testing for, say, coliform bacteria. Is local government doing enough of that sort of thing around here?
Well, we do have one of our community partners this year, the Delaware Soil and Water Conservation District. They are working with IDEM on the Mississinewa River and sampling many locations along that river. And one of the parameters that they are taking samples for is E. coli. So it's part of a long-term project monitoring the river health along the stretch from all the way up near the Ohio state line all the way down to Marion, and looking if there are changes in how the E. coli nitrates and phosphates are distributed, but also looking if there are changes through time, differences between the summer versus the winter.
Ball State professors Adam Cuban and Lee Floria conducting research on river quality in our region. Coming up, how would you grade the river?
Peace like a river ran through the city.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
Well, it would be good to know, I guess, from a public policy standpoint, how our rivers and streams are doing, say, relative to other states. I mean, if you wanted to evaluate what kind of a job the Indiana Department of Environmental Management is doing and other state regulatory officials, wouldn't it be great to be able to grade these streams and say, well, it looks nice, but they're twice as dirty as they are in Ohio or something like that. Do we have any kind of information that tells us, that lets the public know how we're doing?
There are public available resources that document water health. Perhaps one of the largest out there is the U.S. Geological Survey. And any person from the wider public can log on to their website and access locations from all around the nation where they can look at water quality and water levels in streams and rivers throughout the United States. As far as comparing one state to the other, there is some measure of that that some people do. Major watersheds and rivers get studies every so often to evaluate their health, less so for comparing against other watersheds, but to see how those watersheds may have changed through time. Laws in various states differ. The EPA is the national governing organization, but IDEM in the state of Indiana manages Indiana waters. Kentucky has their equivalent organization that manages their waters, and so forth. So the laws are a little bit different, but generally speaking, they try to meet or exceed the EPA requirements.
Well, you know why people would ask the question, right? There's a strong movement to curtail the cost of government, and in that context, you need to know how well state agencies are doing. And so if they're not doing a good enough job protecting the environment, and particularly these streams, it would be good to know that, right? It'd be good to know what kind of shape our streams are in. And I suppose, Adam, part of that is the storytelling, the explaining this to the public and helping people understand that. There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of data from USGS and other sources, but you know, most of us aren't equipped to understand that. So you kind of have a task in front of you to explain this to people, right?
Yes, we sure do. We actually have a two-prong approach to our class. Last fall, we had a local storyline or story angle, and that pertained to Buck Creek, as Lee mentioned in the conversation, where we looked at sediment load. We also looked at nutrient load in the water samples that we collected in order to communicate that data then and what it meant. Why is that valuable information to the public? And that tied into our second storyline, which is more of a statewide connectivity angle. The idea that everybody lives downstream of somebody else. And so what happens here, even though the river continues to flow and it will push things, you know, downstream, that will have an impact. And, you know, what happens in Muncie in the White River, that will have an impact in Indianapolis and Bloomington, and then as it works its way eventually into the Wabash River on the southwest side of the state. So that's the idea, too, is to take these students to these river junctures or confluence points and try to capture what it looks like there and maybe get some sample scientific data from those sites at publicly available land in order to show what's happening in that holistic sense.
Sometimes when it comes to the environment, you have to explain to folks why it matters, right? I mean, it would be great if just the environment by itself were enough of a concern for folks to care about it. But maybe sometimes what I would think your challenge is, you have to explain, why should I care, right? Well, I would imagine one thing that would be good for people to understand is if your community is along the White River, chances are that's your water supply. So what happens upstream from you really matters.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Lee again. And Ball State, Muncie, Greater Delaware County receives most of their drinking water, of course, from the White River and wells that are alongside the White River up towards Prairie Creek Reservoir. And certainly, you know, understanding how those environmental parameters change helps us to understand how to better manage that resource through time. And as, you know, populations grow, as water demands increase, certainly state and local agencies are looking for other means to manage and obtain water resources. So it behooves us as a public to better understand what we currently have so that we can find ways to better manage it, basically to prepare for future trends and population changes throughout the state.
We're used to grading things. I mean, I think that they grade rapids on how treacherous they are. They grade in this state, they grade schools. We grade everything, right? Do they grade rivers? And if they did, what kind of grade should we give the White River here in the Muncie area?
Well, this is Lee again, and being new to the area.
You guys were both laughing.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. We do live in an era of accountability, yeah. That's for sure. And your examples, yeah, hit. I mean, to my knowledge, and Lee can speak to this better than I can, I don't believe there's a grade system on rivers.
We grade whitewater rapids, but we don't. I'm trying to think if there is actually a specific grading system, uh-huh. But we do evaluate water health, and there are very specific guidelines that the EPA, that IDEM uses to understand what thresholds apply before we have a detrimental effect to wildlife or human health. And those standards are set at the top level from the EPA, and then the state sets their own parameters based upon that. And so I guess in that sense, those are grades, but we don't have like a, you know, an A, B, C, D grading system for rivers that I'm aware of.
Ball State Geology Professor Lee Floria with Professor Adam Cuban from the Department of Journalism on their immersive learning class on the health of local rivers. Turns out it's pretty hard to grade them, but there's still a lot more you'd want to know about their health and the quality of our water.
Catfish are jumping, that paddle wheel thumping, black water keep rolling on fast, just the same.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
So part two of the question, if you were grading this river based upon what you know.
And so as I was laughing, you know, we're both relatively new. We hear all kinds of horror stories about, you know, the past and how the White River used to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, not long ago, there was the White River cleanup, and I was talking with somebody who said, you couldn't believe it. Years ago, right, this layer of muck on the bottom from all these industrial waste that had been dumped into there. And now there are many more species of fish and other creatures around here, so they've come a long way, if nothing else.
Right, absolutely, and those trends have been showing a positive direction through time, and you know, based upon our conversations with people who have been around here for a long time, things have changed dramatically for the better. But you know, with that said, there are the unseen things that we still try to work with, and understanding not just the CSOs and the industrial waste, which was the big problem in the 60s and 70s and into the 80s, starting the cleanup process, but the unseen things are what are coming from further upstream, from individual residences, from smaller communities that are upstream with their own CSOs, and from, of course, the big state issue, which is agriculture and understanding how to manage that properly.
What about the types of chemicals used on farms today? Are they any better?
Well, the big things that have changed are not necessarily what we're putting on the water.
By the way, here's some aquatic life over here.
Yeah, we got some mallard ducks over there.
Yeah. They're listening in. We certainly haven't changed exactly what we're putting on, but we've changed how much and how we manage the fields that we're putting it on. We're, as a state and nationally, we're taking more care to lessen the load of nitrogen and lessen the load of phosphate that we're putting on, trying to bring it down to the amount that the plants actually need. And then at the same time, changing the ways that we manage the fields through cover crops and through no-till type of agriculture that also helps reduce the amount of that fertilizer that runs off into the streams. But really more important, as we're seeing, you know, through our work and that managers of waterways have known for a while, is that what borders the stream is extremely important. It's not just necessarily reducing the amount of fertilizer or putting cover crops. It's really how much of a tree buffer do you have? What is the stability of the bank of that river? How does that river respond to floods? What does the channel look like? Has it been engineered or is it natural? Those are extremely important to understanding how much sediments and nitrogen and phosphates are moving through that system, because the nature of those nutrients is that they're mobilized very easily during flood events when the channel is not properly managed.
What do you see as you look around here? I mean, this bank, by the way, they had the White River cleanup, so there's very little litter around here. What do you see as a person who thinks about this a lot?
Well,
and we're here at the Tillotson Bridge over White River.
Okay, so I'll answer this slightly differently, because here we're certainly in a municipal setting, and so obviously there's been lots of engineering of the channel and of the stream banks over 100 plus years of urbanization. However, Adam and I take students on canoes as part of this class, and we start in Yorktown and we work our way down towards canoe country in Daleville, and along that journey we point out some of these kinds of things that we're talking about now with stream banks. There are places where you can see undercutting and stream bank erosion. There are places where
which is natural, right?
It is natural.
Just happens, yeah.
It is natural, absolutely. It's just a matter of what the pace of that is. And sometimes when you have even a natural channel, if you have unnaturally managed the upstream parts, you can increase the amount of erosion because you have more runoff that goes through there, which can increase erosion of cut banks and then undercut trees, and they might collapse into the river, which may lead to things like log jams on some of our waterways, which then can, you know, increase flooding and so forth and so on. And so we point those things out to our students as when we're on canoes. Here looks like, you know, a good riparian zone, that which riparian zone means that buffer between the channel of the river and out into the adjoining field. You know, we see proper management here. The field has not been tilled up to the edge of the creek. We don't see cow paths coming down into it. Some places you'll see lots of tree roots exposed, and which means that there's erosion undercutting those tree roots, and they stand a chance of collapsing. And we see on the White River examples of where that collapse has happened, and certainly our students are looking at that right now in the Mississinewa River, where they do have problems with log jams.
By the way, knowing what you know and from what you've studied, do you have any qualms about partaking of the drinking water here in Muncie from this river?
Well, Adam, I think, might answer a bit of this in context of how we're doing this as a class, but the Bureau of Water Quality has a treatment plant just downstream of here, and they, of course, do an effective job at treating the water and cleaning that water and distributing that water to the city, and as part of their process, they are obliged to send out a water quality report that tells the citizens what's in their water. And so, no, I'm not afraid to drink the water because I know that they do a good job in meeting standards to clean it up that are established by state and federal law.
Geology professor Lee Floria and journalism professor Adam Cuban put together a class on the health of local rivers, partly with a mission to share their findings. We tend to take water for granted because it's so freely available, but that is here. You don't have to go that far to find people with a big problem on their hands as the world's supply of fresh water becomes increasingly threatened. If there's a silver lining to the stream, it's that we've gotten a lot better. It's been a long time, for example, since one of our rivers actually caught fire as they used to do. That's our show for today, friends, where we take good news where we can find it. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture of Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.